The market is moving fast. And all of that speed puts you right in the middle of the action.
I feel the need for speed.
Trying to pick out the stocks, mutual funds, and ETFs that are your real targets from the ones that will make your portfolio crash and burn. Investment research firm New Constructs looks for the telltale signs in corporate filings that show which way a security will move next.
Warning, warning.
Whether it is flying a true course or misleading the investment public about its prospects.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
New Constructs separates all securities into those that are attractive and the ones that are, well, dangerous.
Danger, danger.
Every Monday on Money Life, company president David Trainer shoots down one security whose actions he thinks have it headed for trouble.
What you have done is wrong.
Whether you simply sell it or get aggressive and sell it short, you'll want to know which securities to have on your radar as Money Life enters the danger.
Buckle up, everybody. We're headed for trouble. But we're going to make sure that while you're getting the bumpy ride, you're also coming out the other end safe and clear, because this is the Danger Zone. We're joined right now by David Trainer, the president of New Constructs. New Constructs is a research and investment firm that evaluates securities on a scale of most attractive to most dangerous. What makes a stock attractive is typically that the numbers look better when you dig in at the footnotes level than they do from the top. So the result is, hey, here's a stock that people might not think is so good. And yeah, actually, the numbers say it's promising. And the flip side is what happens in a dangerous case, where David and his crew dig in at the footnotes level, the grassroots, and they work their way up and they find out if those top down numbers are misleading. If you want to learn more about how it works, if you want to see more commentary on any of the Danger Zone picks, go to newconstructs.com, where they blog about the things they talk about on this show. They also put out a list each month of the most attractive and most dangerous stocks. Beyond the website, they're on Twitter, at New Constructs. David Trainer, welcome back to Money Life.
Great to be back, Chuck. Thank you.
Who's in the Danger Zone this week?
Cornerstone On Demand.
Cornerstone On Demand. That's CSOD, an interesting company I'm only lightly familiar with, so I certainly don't know what the problem is here. So what's the problem here?
This is a formula for disaster that we have seen play out with Valiant, with Demandware, and some other SaaS companies. And it kind of goes back to a Danger Zone call we did a few weeks ago on compensation committees and corporate governance. When we see how this Valiant thing is playing out, and you sort of see the misaligned incentives at the very top, it's pretty much categorically a bad thing. And we're seeing the same thing with Cornerstone On Demand. You've got executives paid for performance metrics that are misaligned with shareholder value. They're getting paid for doing things that actually run the business into the ground. And you see it in the numbers. Revenue's going up quickly, albeit decelerating. It's still going up at a 45% clip on average, though it dropped to 29% last year, while economic earnings or real cash flows are headed like down. They're negative and getting worse. And that happens and the stock goes up because people are focused on these non-GAAP metrics. Revenue, earnings that exclude all kinds of operating costs. It's mind-boggling. I'm surprised that, you know, Kyle, who does a lot of the original research, or you know, the analyst that helps me write these things, I'm like, how many of these guys still exist out there? You can't believe it.
But this is an interesting case where I would lump Valiant in as a pharma company or what have you. If I had to look at Cornerstone On Demand, what I know of it, this is a software company that I would say is a speculative investment. It's a speculative growth company. I mean, it's not like a penny stock or any of those things. It's trading in the 30s. But this is a very speculative company that when you sort of understand a little bit about the business, it's like software cloud stuff to help people recruiting and training and managing people within their organization. And I hear about this and I hear about what they do. And I think this is a company that can't survive on its own, that it's got to be a takeover target, that this is going to be, hey, I built this system and don't you want to make this inclusive if you are, I don't know, a Microsoft or somebody else. Don't you want to have this in your suite of things? So I look at this and think it's only ever built to be a takeover target anyway, that it's not built to be, hey, you're going to be here for 20 years as a freestanding company. Does that change things? I mean, I recognize that they have to be a freestanding company and everything else, but If management is always going, hey, what we want to do is build value, and sell. And I recognize you're saying that they're not really building value. It's kind of fake value. But aren't they sort of doing the right thing if the ends here are, yep, at some point we're going to sell out?
You know, that's a great question. And we actually have in our internal checklist for every idea that we look through, we vet, one of the items on that list is, we call it stupid money risk. The idea that someone would come in and buy these guys, right? Because I do think you're right. And you'll see it in our, in the articles we write to support these calls. We have a section in every one that looks at takeover speculation and really, you know, what to think would be a reasonable price for takeover. And in this situation, we do that. We did that last week on Blackbaud. And really the way we look at it is, first of all, take into account hidden liabilities. So you got 120 million bucks in off balance sheet debt and option liabilities that you're going to have to pay for if you want to buy this company. And that's 7% of the market cap. And then we looked at what kind of price would make sense for, say, an IBM. We can do it for any company, but we chose IBM in this situation. What price makes sense for IBM to pay and still get a decent return on capital? Because I don't know if you remember in our men's warehouse call, and when we talk about acquisitions, Newell, Rubbermaid, and Jarden, you know, we look at how much cash flow the acquiring company gets and how much they pay for it. And that return number, so if you pay $1 billion for $100 million in cash flow, well, that's a 10% return. That's not bad for return on capital or for an acquisition. But that's the way it should be looked at, just like you should look at every investment you make and everything in life and look at kind of what kind of return you get on it. So we can look at, based on what we know about the cash flows for Cornerstone, right? We can reverse engineer what the denominator or payment should be from an IBM in order to, for IBM to earn a decent return. And so we do that in our reports. And so we can look, then come to an implied stock price, right? So at the lowest threshold, right, if IBM just wants to earn a return on capital equal to or greater than their cost of capital, which is the minimum level of return, and by the way, that's significantly lower than what their current return on capital is, right? So you always want returns on capital to get higher, not lower. That drives valuation up. And lower returns on capital drives valuation down. But if we say IBM's got to earn a 6% return, then in order for them to pay $9 a share for Cornerstone, they need to get to at least half the margins of where IBM is. So you got to believe that Cornerstone's margin can go from minus 20% to 9%. Now, if Cornerstone's margins immediately go to where IBM is, you say by some magic of acquisition, which is highly unrealistic because there are costs involved in an acquisition, but say by the magic of acquisition, Cornerstone's margins go to 18%, same as IBM's, immediately upon the acquisition. Well, then IBM should pay $20, which is still 38% down.
I was going to say, we're still talking about a stock that is trading at above 30, so you're still talking about significant downturn. You know, with everything else here, and you talk about what the problems are the numbers also misleading? I mean, are we at a spot where you also can look at the valuation and make a case that, separate from the stupid money risk and the fact that somebody might take it over, they're like, oh, just forget about it as you put it all together. No, 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 this is just bad. I mean, do those numbers exist right now on this one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we do both. We always do both. But I wanted to highlight the new acquisition stuff because I think that's really cool. I mean, that just puts it in the shareholder perspective, right? What should someone pay? What can I reasonably, as a hope and pray investor that Cornerstone on Demand gets acquired, what's a reasonable price for me to assume that someone would pay? And I think that's a good metric. And it's similar to most other companies, honestly, whoever's paying, because given a certain level of cash flow that Cornerstone on Demand can create, there's just so much someone should be willing to pay for that for any kind of return. Now, when we want to look at organically, what kind of organic growth that Cornerstone would have to achieve to justify its current valuation, right? They have to go from negative 20% margins to positive margins, grow revenue by 30% compounded annually for 20 years. Now, in such a scenario, 20 years from now, they would be generating $64 billion in revenue, which is more than Intel and double Oracle.
Yeah, right? We're not holding our breath that that's going to happen.
Yeah, so clearly this is they're hoping for stupid money opportunity. They're hoping for somebody to acquire them. But the point is, the most, you know, the most anyone could pay for these guys is about $20 a share, net of liabilities and all that. I mean, that's what you would pay if you want to earn a decent, if you as the acquiring company want to show your shareholders that you don't want to overpay for something.
That's why Cornerstone On Demand, CSOD, trading in the 30s, isn't going to justify a price better than the 20s, and from the sounds of it, it's going to have a hard time justifying a price that good. That's why it's in the danger zone. David Trainer, thanks as always.
Great being with you, Chuck. Thank you.
David Trainer is the president at New Constructs, newconstructs.com, on Twitter, at New Constructs. For more information, to check out more details on their pick of Cornerstone On Demand. All right, we are heading for home on the Monday edition of Money Life. Up next, the Market Call with James Abadi from Center Asset Management. Stay tuned.